Hello, bioharmonizers, and welcome to the podcast. These days, we hear a lot of people talking about how they are combining modern science with ancestral wisdom. It sounds cool, but it's often just talk. And our guest this week is an exception. Dr. Nick Bitz is a naturopathic physician that specializes in Ayurvedic medicine. He's a leading voice in the natural products industry and currently serves as a senior vice president of product development at Neurohacker Collective. His areas of expertise include nootropics, anti-aging medicine, biohacking, herbology, nutrition, and dietary supplements. Today, we're discussing longevity medicine, or the field of anti-aging, as it's commonly called. We chat about the ancient Ayurvedic principles of longevity, and then some of the newer topics around senolytics and smart supplementation to increase health span. You can find the show notes to this one at mindbodypeak.com/80. And if you want to check out some of the Qualia products yourself, you can use the code URBAN, U-R-B-A-N, to save 15%. And during the holidays, all of the Neurohacker / Qualia products are on a huge sale, up to 70% off. And that stacks with our code URBAN for unparalleled savings. And finally, if you find this information educational, useful, or entertaining, we'd love to hear your thoughts, so if you can scroll to the bottom of whatever platform you're listening to this on and leave a quick rating and review, that makes a huge difference, ensuring that I keep bringing you thought-provoking, world-class guests. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Nick Bitz of the Neurohacker Collective. Dr. Bitz, welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Nick.
Well, I've been looking forward to this because you specialize in a number of different things that I'm also interested in. So today we're going to talk about senolytic therapies. We're going to talk about Ayurveda and the combination of those two with nootropics and cognitive enhancement.
Okay, this should be fun.
So let's start off today with, have there been any unusual or non-negotiable things you've done for your health and performance?
Oh, that's a great question to start. My non-negotiables are pretty basic overall. I used to do very extreme measures for many years, and I've definitely toned down my regimen. My non-negotiables now are clean food, sleeping 8 hours every single night, and being consistent in my regimen too, going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time, which is critically important. And probably the two other non-negotiables would be meditation daily, if only for 10 minutes, ideally for 2 hours, if possible, and ashwagandha. I lean heavily on ashwagandha, which is an Ayurvedic botanical. I've used it for years. I take it in gram doses every single day. It really helps create balance in my body and mind. So huge fan of ashwagandha. I use it every day.
Are there any forms of ashwagandha that you prefer, like patented extracts or any standardization?
You know, I find that they're all very similar. There are different extracts. There's different standardizations of withanolides that are found on the marketplace. There's different branded materials in the marketplace. I don't notice huge shifts with using any of them. Lately, I've been using KSM 66, which is a branded material from the root. And it just works really well. It's a water extract. It's organic. It's really clean. But I often will just lean on a basic powder that's not standardized at all. And I'm okay with that. So again, when I start using gram doses, you do notice subtle differences, but it gives you a much bigger effect and a much more felt response than if you're doing just 200 milligrams in a blend of other botanicals. And so I like focusing on one herb and doing big doses of it and then allowing that to really shift my physiology internally.
Yeah, And that's one thing I've been thinking about more recently, that when you standardize to a particular active ingredient, that means inherently you have to be getting less of something else. And perhaps we don't know what that is yet. Perhaps we do know and we just don't recognize or think it's as important as it may be when there's more research.
Yeah, you're spot on. With every extraction, there definitely is some deletion. And you know, when you look back traditionally, folks didn't use standardized extracts. You know, you go back 5,000 years in the Ayurvedic tradition in India, they use just powders. And so that's what's really tried and true. And so oftentimes I think the full botanical is much more effective, at least long-term, than a standardized extract.
It seems like the standardization is going more down the pharmaceutical route rather than the ancient way it's been used in these older forms of medicine.
Yeah, you know, and I tend to lean on what's old works better than what's new. Often, there are a couple areas that are changing my mind, especially when we get into aging. I like some of the cutting edge modalities that we have available these days that are brand new. But when you look at food, when you look at botanicals, I would say what's old and what's ancient is much better often than kind of what's new.
Yeah, and a lot of these things have stood the test of thousands of years versus newer stuff. It's only been around 1 year, 10 years, even 100 years. And every day I'm coming across new articles, new publications about the side effects we're just realizing for things people have been taking for in some cases, decades.
Yeah, you're spot on. And in part, that's why I like Ayurveda. I mean, it's been around for 5,000 years. It's still very much alive and flourishing today. And it's an evolving science. So we're continuing to add to the wisdom, the knowledge, the saints and sages and physicians thousands of years ago started. And I like that aspect of it. I like that it's a natural approach. It leans into these universal laws and principles that apply for everyone. And they've always applied for everyone. And they're equally valid today, which is important. And so it's very practical. It's very easy. It's very tangible. And the nice thing is that you can apply those principles to your own life. You don't need to lean on a physician or a healthcare practitioner to give you those insights. You can start using those tools today in your own house, in your own kitchen, to create health.
I'm a huge fan of it because it's a form of very safe yet effective preventative medicine.
Indeed. And that's, for me, that's the essence of it. You know, it really breaks everything down into energetic properties. When you look at food, you know, it says certain foods are beneficial for your body type. And it really breaks it down on that level, which I love. So when you look at, as an example, a salad, right? And you look from the Western mindset, everybody's like, oh, you need to eat more salad. Salad's super healthy. But when you break it down from an Ayurvedic perspective, salads are not always beneficial nor recommended for most body types. For certain body types, yes. But for other body types, they can be poison.
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue into your background. I'm curious how you got involved in this and a little more about the intersection, the very fascinating intersection you now sit on between the bridge of the ancestral and the modern.
Yeah, indeed. You know, and I'm a naturopathic doctor by training. And I think one of the gifts of most naturopathic physicians is that we are right out that cusp. You know, we have one foot in the old and one foot in the new. And I love that a lot. And so that's really been my path. You know, when I was incredibly young, I was 10 years old, I fell out of a tree and hurt my back. And I couldn't find any relief. You know, I went to physician, and they said, you're fine. All our scans show that you're fine. The blood work shows that you're fine. You have a little bit of pain, but it'll go away. But internally, I was struggling. I was in a lot of pain. I was not playing sports as actively as I wanted to. And so I was really forced to deal with my health condition on my own. And so I started exploring traditional Chinese medicine, started getting into acupuncture, started getting into botanicals, started getting into the energetics of food. And that just blew my mind wide open. And I love that because, again, it gave me the tools to heal myself. And it was very effective. And so that started me down this kind of alternative medicine path. I was always wanting to go to medical school, but given my leaning into these Eastern philosophies and Eastern medical systems, I gravitated toward naturopathic medical school. And when I was there, I discovered Ayurvedic medicine. One of my teachers was Robert Svoboda, who's one of the foremost teachers in Ayurveda in the United States right now. Amazing gentleman, just a wealth of knowledge. And so I had the pleasure of learning from him for several years. He made recommendations for me to go to Southern India, where again, Ayurveda is alive and well, and move into an ashram, move into a hospital, study with physicians over there, learn from a guru, really plug into Ayurveda in its native land, which I did for months at a time. And so there I really got a good grip on Ayurvedic medicine. And I brought that back into the States. And I really started incorporating a lot of those principles, those philosophies, those tools into my naturopathic practice. And so when I moved out of medical school, opened a practice in Los Angeles, a pretty eclectic practice, did a lot of environmental medicine, IV nutritional therapies, worked with some really hard to treat cases, worked with a lot of peds, young children. But I applied a lot of these different modalities and philosophies into one practice. And I found it to be very, very effective. So it truly was integrative, really was bringing together a lot of the conventional medicines with naturopathic medicines and Ayurvedic medicines. And I loved it. However, with all of that said, I've always wanted to get into the dietary supplement space. You know, I grew up in Colorado and worked at some of the first health food stores in America and really plugged into botanicals, dietary supplements at a very young age. Back in my mind, I always wanted to make my own line and really blow up the whole dietary supplement space. And it wasn't until recently that I did move into that as a profession. And so after I was practicing for a few years, I moved 100% into the dietary supplement space as a product formulator, working for several different companies, and most recently for a company called Neurohacker Collective. Very unique, an emerging D2C, direct-to-consumer brand found online, focus on nootropic products and aging products in particular.
It's interesting. Your background sounds similar to mine in terms of discovering these older medicines, if I can call it that. I first found traditional Chinese medicine when I was doing my own research into some of the problems that current Western medicine doesn't have answers to. And then somewhere along my research, I came across information that the Chinese studied in India and came back and brought that knowledge there. And I realized that Ayurveda has been around a lot longer and it's a very systematic, built out system. And from there, I got very fascinated and started reading books on it and doing some self-study. And there's so much interesting knowledge, powerful knowledge out there.
It's an endless study, you know, and I'm still a student. I've been studying it for decades. I'm still a student. I'm still learning. You know, if you look at the word Ayurveda, it is two Sanskrit words, as you probably know, Nick. Ayu means life and Veda means science. And so it's much more than a medical system. It really is, it's a way of living and a way of understanding the universe, understanding your place in the universe, and then aligning with that truth so that you are happy, healthy, and that you can live a long life. And so I find that it really encompasses all aspects of life. And again, it uses these time-tested tools to create health and wellness. And it's so effective. I love it.
I agree with you. And I call it a medical system because when I say it's a life science, people look at me and raise their hands like, what does that mean?
It's a good point. Yeah, it's a little foreign. I can appreciate. It's a very different paradigm. So I think it's hard for people to wrap their head around that. But it is just, it's a body of wisdom that's been accrued over, you know, thousands of years. And a part of that is medical. There's no doubt. There's a diagnosis, there's a treatment, but it is so much more to that. And the part that I keep going deeper and deeper into is the philosophy, the universal structure that it brings. And it's super complex and amazing and comprehensive. I do think that it embodies everything, which I like.
Dr. Bitz, I want to talk about senolytic therapy now. And did Ayurveda have anything, any knowledge around senolytics or any therapies that accomplished something similar?
Yeah, that is a very interesting question. I don't know that I've considered it fully. I would say there's no doubt that a lot of their modalities and a lot of their thinking are in that direction. Obviously, they didn't use that terminology. The word senolytic has only been around since 2015, and it's just recently kind of started to bubble up and emerge right now in the literature. I think when you look at what a senolytic is, it really helps to kind of trim away these old dead cells that are just lingering inside our tissues. And in essence, that is what Ayurveda is designed to do. There's something called Panchakarma, and that's their form of detox therapy. It's a very deep protocol. It can take weeks to undergo the regimen, but Pancha means five and karma means action. And so it's these five different actions that you undergo basically facilitate the removal of anything that's not needed in the body. And Ayurveda refers to these as doshas. And so it's a very, very deep cleansing process. And I would say in part how that works is through the shedding of these old parts of you that are no longer serving you or no longer needed, which in essence, I would say is similar to a senolytic in many ways.
I learned the other day that according to Ayurveda and a teacher I follow named Dr. John Duyard, that emotion can be held in fat. So when people go through detoxes, they sometimes have these extreme emotional outbursts. They'll break down crying for no apparent reason. And he was mentioning how that could be a large part of it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the common saying, which I hate to say because it almost makes me roll my eyes, but the issues are in your tissues. And there is something about that. We're learning a lot more about how you store those emotions. And just like Chinese medicine, Ayurveda too looks at the organs, and each organ relates to a specific type of emotion. And so within both of those Eastern philosophies, as an example, we store grief in our lungs. And so people that have any kind of grief will have lung issues, trouble breathing, shortness of breath, a tendency towards pneumonia, these types of things, because grief is just set deeply within the fabric of their lungs. And so it is interesting when you start to treat the emotions and you start to treat the tissues, it can have this residual carryover effect on each other, which is really super fascinating.
Yeah, especially when there's no underlying cause of an injury or a diagnosable infection of sorts, and all of a sudden you start having these symptoms associated with a very specific organ. It's interesting to look up and check to see if there's an association with something in these systems, whether it's traditional Chinese medicine or Ayurveda.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it is interesting, again, this is when you start doing the deep dive into Ayurveda. I mean, you can look at every single organ and look at what specific emotion predominates. And so it could be as simple as, let's look at anger. As an example, anger tends to reside in the liver. So if you're noticing that you have a lot of anger in your life or you're easily triggered, it might be beneficial then to start focusing on liver treatment. So doing liver herbs, doing a liver healthy diet, and doing these things. And so it makes a lot of sense. But I love those Eastern philosophies. They've captured those ideas, and then they actually give you the path for kind of correcting those dysfunctions.
Yeah. So let's go more into the senolytic therapies now and what some of the modern research is showing and what made you and Neurohacker interested in exploring and creating products to help improve the senolytic process.
Yeah, we've been watching this field unfold for the last 5 or 6 years. It's easily one of the most fascinating areas right now of science and research, certainly one of the most buzzworthy within the biohacking community. It's really hard to overstate the promise and the potential of senolytics. And in many ways, I see senescence, or more specifically senolytics, as the future of healthy aging. I believe in them that much. And I think it is early days, but so far what we've seen in the research is validating the idea that these things are incredibly powerful, and they can really have meaningful effects in the human population. Why I like senolytics is because they target aging itself, not the downstream manifestations of aging that we see in a clinical setting, but rather the driving force or the root cause that promotes the aging process. And so by targeting that upstream process, you can literally influence everything downstream. And it can have huge ramifications throughout the entire body, throughout the physical body, throughout the emotional body, throughout the mental body, the spiritual body. It can have these really compounding effects that are really quite amazing. So again, it's still early days, but the research right now is so compelling that we decided we needed to get into it early and build a product in this area that is based in science and is it really at the cutting edge right now of aging.
Yeah, I talked to a man named Amate Eshel of Young Goose Skincare, and we were talking about the tenets of aging, and he pointed out that just because there's 7 or 9, however many tenets there are, it doesn't mean they're all weighted equally, and senolytics seems like it's upstream of so much, and if you get this right, you're going to improve the other tenets as well.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I certainly agree with that. Yeah, I mean, the hallmarks of aging show that there are 9 main mechanisms of aging. And these are just the underlying processes that kind of drive the aging process. They are potentially adding more to the hallmarks of aging. There was a conference in March overseas where they discussed some new science. And so they might add 5 more hallmarks to the aging paradigm, including inflammation and microbiome disturbances. So we're still really adding to this core concept that we call the hallmarks of aging. But, you know, there is no one theory that can fully nor comprehensively explain the aging process. And so that's why scientists are leaning on kind of the hallmarks of aging as a combination theory, because it is starting to encapsulate most of our thinking around the aging process. And it's interesting. And at the very least, it gives us something to dig into in terms of the research and how to proceed and what to look at. I think with the emergence of cellular senescence and senolytics in 2015, I think it has been weighted more than a lot of these other areas, because suddenly we think that there is a very impactful area that we can target in terms of research, in terms of science, in terms of health promotion.
Dr. Bitz, I think if people have heard of senolytics, they've heard the term zombie cells and that the certain ingredients can help clean up those zombie cells. But can you explain what it is and like what's actually happening in the body in the first place?
Yeah, that's probably a good place to start. I think there's a lot of confusion. It's a fairly technical word, senescence, not incredibly sexy, not very fun. But senescence comes from a Latin word, senex, that means to grow old. So senescence is the process of growing old. And cellular senescence then is a cell growing old. And in essence, a cell that stops dividing. So the key here is that a senescent cell basically lingers inside the body. It's not functionally normally as healthy cells do, but it's not self-destructing as healthy cells do. And so it kind of just sits there in your tissues, and that's what creates problems. And so we're constantly producing these senescent cells on a daily basis. It's healthy, it's normal. We produce them in response to exercise or trauma, but generally speaking, the body will go in, the immune system specifically, will go in and clip these cells from the body, or those cells will go through apoptosis. And apoptosis is a Latin word that means falling off. And so it's a natural process that cells undergo, and it's called programmed cell death. And so much like a yellow leaf falling off of a tree or a flower falling off of a plant or fruit falling off of a bush, these cells then will fall off from the body naturally. And that's important, that is normal, that's healthy. But what happens if these cells stick around and they don't go through apoptosis, or your immune system isn't robust and it's not going in and clipping these cells from the body? They end up taking up room in your tissues. And so you have structural changes in tissues, and you also have functional changes in tissues. And so a structural change, for example, would be in the skin, when you have these cells that are just sitting there doing nothing, it can really change the structure of your skin. And it creates a lot of the problems that we see with aged skin, namely wrinkles, sagginess, loss of elasticity, discoloration, lack of blood flow. In part, that's due to these senescent cells that are lodged in our skin. And from a functional standpoint, these cells can really decrease tissue function anywhere in the body. So as an example, if these senescent cells get lodged in the brain, it can really minimize cognition. It can lead to brain fog. It can reduce the ability to learn new facts. It can decrease memory. So it can have very profound consequences from a functional aspect as well. These cells are unique for a couple different reasons. And this is when you start getting into some of the technical talk and science, but I think it's worth mentioning. So senescent cells essentially stick around because they're upregulating these survival proteins that are known as SCAP networks. And these SCAP networks are just these anti-apoptosis pathways that they're kind of shielding those cells from self-destructing. And they also secrete what's called SASP factors, which are these harmful inflammatory chemicals. They're sitting there, they're excreting these chemicals in the tissues. And what happens is they're basically converting the microenvironment around them into senescent cells as well. And that's why we call senescent cells zombie cells, because they're dead, they don't die, but they're trying to convert other neighboring cells into senescent cells as well. And it can just spread like wildfire throughout the body. There's really no test method for looking at a person's senescent cell burden. The most validated method would be a biopsy. Not very practical, but unfortunately there's no blood test, there's no urine test, stool test that can give us an accurate representation of somebody's senescent cell burden currently. But we do know that individuals, generally speaking, over the age of 50 will have about 10% of their tissues will be impacted by senescent cells. So again, that can really lead to that loss of function, that loss of stress resistance, inability to recover from injury. And because they secrete those SASP factors, you get that chronic low-grade inflammation. You know, it really leads to the question then of how do we support the elimination of those guys from the body, which is a senolytic.
Yeah. What are some of the other risk factors that increase your odds of needing more senolytic support, such as injury or like traumatic brain injury? I think I read that being a big one.
Yeah, I mean, age would be number one. You know, we tend to accumulate senescent cells over time. So anyone over the age of 50 will tend to have a much greater burden than somebody who's 20, for example. Anybody that's exposed to any kind of cell damage, you know, so reactive oxygen species from sunlight or from the diet or from the environment, whatever it might be. What else would lead to that? Definitely any kind of trauma, whether that's, you know, to your point, traumatic brain disorder or exercise, it does lead to senescent cells over time. And so it is important to make sure that your cells are moving through that senescence in a practical way and being eliminated from the body, because it is an important feature. We do need cells moving into senescence, but it's important that they don't linger.
Yeah. So it sounds like athletes and people going on to the second half, or depending on the camp you're in, second, third of their life, they should be more wary of senescent burden and possibly doing more things to support.
I think that's fair enough. You know, anything that's going to suppress your immune system is going to lead to more senescent cells. Anything that raises your blood sugar is going to lead to more senescent cells. We're not sure why hyperglycemia leads to senescence, but it does. And so we're starting to get more and more research into that area and understanding the importance of balancing blood sugar. And, you know, we know that a fasting mimicking diet is important as well. It helps to prime senescent cells from the body. So I would surmise that eating the wrong kind of foods or eating too much foods, which is the opposite of fasting, might promote the process of senescence as well.
Yeah. Are there any proxies we can use to determine elevated risk of this, say inflammation, and that could also be because you're eating a bunch of sugar or over-exercising, anything along those lines, you have a latent infection. There's a lot of different reasons, but is it safe to assume that if your inflammation is elevated, you're at higher risk of this?
I think inflammation would be a good proxy. I think right now we're looking at a variety of health measurements, just simple blood measurements, and trying to understand how that shifts over time with the use of senolytics. But it's early days. I don't really have anything beyond that. Of course, we do know that senolytics can improve joint health quite significantly. And so I think an improvement of joint health would be an indicator that you're getting the benefits that you're looking for.
What about someone in their 20s, 30s, 40s? Will they experience benefits from this type of thing also? Or is it more just once you get over a certain age, then it becomes increasingly necessary?
I would say the older you are, the greater the benefit will be. With that said, everybody's unique. We will build senescent cells at different rates and in different parts of our body. And so it's really... It's hard to predict as a general rule the impact of senescence across the board.
Are there general side effects from undergoing these types of therapies, such as maybe like low energy or problem putting on muscle mass or maintaining like fitness status, like these types of things?
Yeah, when you're using senolytics, there should be minimal side effects. We have found with using Qualia senolytic that digestive complaints, which are very minimal, but digestive complaints seem to be the only side effect that we're noting right now. You really don't get a cell die-off, you know, as you do with other detox therapies where people get this big load of cell products that then the body needs to eliminate. Senolytics work through promoting apoptosis. So they promote cell destruction, but those cells then just dissolve. They're taken up in the extracellular matrix, and then their parts are recycled to build new cells. And so you don't get that same overload of toxicity that you do in other kind of protocols. So I think if done right, you shouldn't notice too many effects. And in part, one of the important facts here to consider is that you should use senolytics for a very short amount of time. And so in the studies on senolytics currently, they use what's called a hit and run protocol, which is intermittent dosing, which means that they use senolytics for 1 to 3 days, generally speaking, and then they allow the body to rest and relax for several weeks before they introduce more senolytics into the body. And so that seems to be not only the most effective, but the safest way to take senolytics.
Yeah, that was actually my next question, is that I discovered this back in 2021, I did a bunch of research and I came across basically two different camps. One is the one you just mentioned, the hit and run, where you take it, you take time off, and then you take it again. And the other is like a very small daily dose.
Yeah, you know, and I definitely lean to the former camp. I think the hit and run approach seems to be really effective given the research and given my N of one experience. I've now done 4 or 5 rounds of senolytic with almost no side effects and with noticeable effects. The studies on dasatinib and quercetin are pretty compelling. And they show that when you do these short protocols and then you give a break, it tends to have these lasting effects for months. In fact, one study showed that the effects lasted for 7 months. In mice, which I thought was kind of amazing. So for me, it just makes a lot of sense. It can take weeks for these senescent cells to reaccumulate. And so it's not something that you need to do day in and day out. And, you know, in fact, we use a lot of botanicals in the Qualia senolytic formula that people are taking day in and day out, you know, curcumin being one of them. So I would say that whether from the diet or from other dietary supplements, you're probably getting some low dose senolytics on a daily basis anyhow. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's dig into that actually. I have Qualia Senolytic right here in front of me. And I was looking at the ingredients profile of this when I was doing my research and comparing it to a lot of the other products on the market. And what you guys have is more comprehensive. You have more ingredients and the optimized forms of a lot of these ingredients. Can you walk us through some of the different components of this product and why you chose the different ingredients?
Yeah, I mean, in essence, it's a blend of 9 different botanical extracts. You know, 7 of them have proven senolytic activity, and we're very confident in that given the literature that's available. We did add some novel compounds, in fact, 2 of them that are mechanism-based. So we looked at how these chemicals, these compounds work in the body and how they can disrupt those scap networks that the senescent cells use to shield themselves from apoptosis in the immune system. And so we're really leaning in on the science that we know, and we're trying to add some innovative science to it as well. We did build the product to be a intermittent dose product. So it's a 2-day product that you do per month. So you take it on day 1, you take it on day 2, and then you give it a break for 4 weeks before doing another cycle. And again, that just, we chose that model because it tends to be fairly aligned with what we're seeing right now in clinical research. And, you know, what I like about the product is that we've combined multiple senolytics into one product. What I find in the marketplace generally are singular products. And I would say that is not giving you the full effect that you really want. And that's for a couple of different reasons, really because number one, senescent cells are heterogeneous. They're not all the same. They secrete different cytokines. They have a different expression of proteins, different scap networks. And so it's important to have multiple ingredients that can disrupt more scap networks. So in theory, then you're going to have a higher clearance using multiple ingredients. And the second point is that senolytics are not all active, equally active in all tissues. And so fisetin, for example, which is one of the primary senolytics that are on the market currently, tends to have an affinity for adipose, whereas quercetin tends to have an affinity for bone marrow. Curcumin tends to have an affinity for the brain. And so when you introduce multiple ingredients into a formula, in theory, it's going to target more tissues and it's going to create more clearance. So I like that. I like that it's really based in science. It's adding some novel aspects to the category. And, you know, we did run a clinical on the product before we launched it, which we do on all of our products. And I think that's one of my pride points for Neurohacker Collective is that we run what we call beta tests on a finished product before it goes to market to make sure that it's tolerated well and that it's efficacious. And so oftentimes, if it's not, we go back to the drawing board, we reformulate, we retest until we're satisfied with the product and the product's effect, and then we bring it to market. And so our short little pilot study that we ran on this formula was pretty compelling. And again, there's no blood test, no urine test, no biochemical marker that we were able to look at to say, here's your load before taking the product and here's your load after taking the product. But we looked at, does this product help people perform better? And what we found was incredibly validating. And so we gave the product to a group of individuals in 3 different cycles, and all of them had some discomfort in activities of daily living and occasional joint stiffness. And we noticed across the board that tolerability was excellent. On average, they reported about a 50% decrease in difficulty performing the activities of daily living, as well as a 50% decrease in joint stiffness. And so that really just showed that this product had very tangible outcomes on much broader outcomes as it is from a functional perspective. And so that really validated the hypothesis that this product is a senolytic, and it gave us the green light to scale it up from there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I really like that you guys do this. You run in-house trials on your finished product before you ship it out, because you can get all the right ingredients and package it and just follow what everyone else is doing and still get different results, not get good results because you're missing something that you didn't even realize was there. So it's critical that I wish more supplement companies would do this. They would take their products and actually test them before they started selling them on the mass market. So good job there. And like you were saying, a lot of the other Senolytics only have 2, max 3 of these ingredients. And I, like you, think that there's a powerful synergy when you take a bunch of different botanicals and extracts and ingredients and you put them together, because they impact tissues differently. They last longer. They just all impact the body. So you get a 1+1=5 type result.
Yeah, you're spot on. You know, and if you look just at fisetin, so fisetin right now is all the rage in the aging community. And, you know, oftentimes people are doing a low dose, and I think that's fine, but I don't know that there's reason to do low dose. And so we know in the clinicals that they're dosing fisetin, at least in animal studies, at a 20 milligram per kilogram of body weight dose. And you can extrapolate that to 155 pound human. And the dose would be 1400 milligrams. And so I think that it's important to make sure that you're using the right forms of compounds at the right dose, using the right timing. And that's what we tried to do here. We tried to bring all of the ingredients together at the right dose to make sure that we're getting the greatest effect possible.
A lot of plant phytochemicals, they are not very bioavailable. You just don't absorb them. And a lot of companies are sprouting up to offer novel delivery mechanisms such as phytosomes or liposomes. And I wonder, like, what happens if you just use a much bigger dose to compensate for that, of like the normal, say, fisetin? Are you not going to increase liver enzymes or have any other negative potential consequences?
I think that's a serious threat. And I think that's a real possibility. And so I would worry about doing much larger doses than what's normal just to get it inside the bloodstream. But bioavailability is certainly an issue. I think it's a growing conversation right now in the dietary supplement space. Obviously, it's huge in the pharmaceutical space. But when you look at, as an example, quercetin, you know, quercetin was kind of the first natural compound that we knew was a senolytic. It's incredibly poorly absorbed into the body. And so that creates many obstacles for health promotion. More isn't always better. Sometimes it's better to skirt around the issue and to use, as an example, a phytosome format of quercetin or a liposomal form, just to make sure that it's getting into the bloodstream and giving you the effects that you want.
Yeah. Any other considerations people should have when they're looking into these types of therapies, or they're considering the Qualia Senolytic? Are there any contraindications or side benefits that we haven't mentioned yet?
Yeah, there's really no contraindications. We know that senescent cells are important for wound healing. In theory, you wouldn't want to do a senolytic when you have a big gaping wound on the body and you're trying to heal. But again, that's more theoretical than anything else. Other than that, there's no major contraindications. One interesting point that I'll bring up here is the idea of anabolic resistance. And I think that this is a very interesting area that senolytics touch. Anabolic resistance is this idea that as we get older, we have this reduced ability to build new muscle. And it's in part responsible for muscle loss that we experience over time with aging, and this inability to turn on new muscle protein synthesis, especially after exercise. And so the older we get, the less that we're able to grow our muscles and recover from exercise. And so, as we've talked about here briefly, Nick, the senescent cells are created after we exercise, and that's normal and that's healthy. And they're usually removed from muscle tissue as a routine part of the body's regeneration process. But the older we get, the more that these senescent cells tend to linger, and they can just wreak havoc in our muscle tissue and really impair muscle growth overall. And so you know, some of the cool new research on senolytics is that senolytics can really help to impact this anabolic resistance. And so giving a senolytic cocktail to older mice can help reduce senescent cell load in muscle and really support new muscle growth and healthier muscle fibers. I think it's truly compelling. And this can happen in literally any tissue inside the body. But the muscles are the most visible because they're on the outside, right? And so I would say that when using any senolytic product, just be mindful that it can impact you in unique and different and subtle ways. And so just pay attention to these changes and these shifts internally that are happening. And they're happening everywhere throughout the body. And so you might notice it in the muscles, you might notice it in the brain, you might notice it in your lungs, you might notice it in your joints. We're all different, but it is impacting you on all levels, which is pretty incredible.
That is incredible. And I didn't realize that in addition to possibly helping with anabolic resistance, it also has cognitive effects as well. Let's go on to that now and talk about your background with nootropics, cognitive enhancement, and any carryover between that and Ayurveda.
Yeah, nootropics are incredible field. I've been intrigued with nootropics for years. I've tried them all, but a nootropic, as you and your listeners probably know, is really any compound that can shift the mind state and improve cognition and behavior. I think there is some overlap from the Ayurvedic tradition. There are certain botanicals. Of course, there's breathing exercise from the yogic tradition. That's the sister science of Ayurveda. All of those things have nootropic effects. But of course, they weren't called nootropics in the Ayurvedic tradition. But I certainly love it. I love it because nootropics are felt. They're very experiential. People can feel their effects fairly quickly and in meaningful ways. And so for that, I like it because oftentimes you'll take a probiotic or you'll take a multivitamin and you have no idea if it's working. You kind of cross your fingers and hope that $40 that you spent on that bottle is doing something good, but you don't actually know it. And with nootropics, you know it. You know it almost immediately, especially for a well-formulated product.
Yeah. And to the people that tell me supplements do nothing other than give you expensive pee, I say, oh, try this or this or this and tell me that in 45 minutes that it does nothing.
You're spot on. And again, that is why I like it. And I point people to nootropics when they talk to me in that way about dietary supplements. And look, a lot of supplements are trash. It's an unfortunate truth. There are a lot of bad players in the industry. There are a lot of awful products on Amazon. But generally speaking, there's some really good brands making some really compelling products with really powerful ingredients based upon incredible science. And so make sure that you're choosing products from reputable brands and use your body as a lab. You know, if it doesn't feel right, stop taking it. Find the dose that works for you. You know, if it says that you need to take 4 capsules per day, maybe you do, but maybe you need to do less. Generally speaking, when I do ashwagandha, as I mentioned before, I do big, big doses. It's incredibly safe. It works really well in big doses in my body. And I use my body and I listen to my body to make sure that I'm fine-tuning how I'm using these products.
And we will not get started down the rabbit hole of Amazon and the problem with buying supplements through them. I mean, just as a quick overview, I've gone through certain vendors and received products, then looking at the images on Amazon and seeing different labels that have surprisingly missing ingredients. And those are additives, things that shouldn't necessarily be there, or reaching out to a company and asking about their Amazon store only to realize that it's actually not sold by them. They don't sell on Amazon, and what they're getting is like some third party that either bought it in bulk or they just like slapped a very similar label onto it and are selling counterfeit supplements. There's all kinds of issues. So I avoid Amazon at all costs when it comes to supplements, unless it's a last resort and I really need a particular product. But it's much safer to go through the company itself and get it on their website than through Amazon.
Couldn't agree more. Yep.
So you mentioned you like ashwagandha. Are there any other nootropics or adaptogens or herbals that you find yourself gravitating towards?
Oh boy, this is a rabbit hole, Nick. I'll mention a few here. I love the caffeine theanine stack. It really is the most basic nootropic stack on the market, and you see it in more and more products. It just flat out works. Theanine, of course, comes from green tea. It's that calming amino acid. And in green tea, the caffeine to theanine ratio tends to be a 2-to-1 ratio, a little bit more caffeine, a little less theanine. But when you flip that ratio upside down and you give the body more theanine and less caffeine, it has profound implications for the brain and the mind. And it just creates this really gentle, pleasant, relaxed but alert state. It's incredibly beneficial for people that are on their computer working every day, or that need to focus, or that need to do public speaking, or, you know, on and on and on. So that's a very basic stack, and I love it. Generally speaking, you want to take about 200 milligrams of theanine and about 100 milligrams of caffeine. And so that 2-to-1 ratio is important, it seems. I do like rhodiola. Rhodiola is an incredible herb for the mind. I find that it's the most uplifting of any botanical out there, besides maybe saffron. And you want to make sure that you're using an extract that's standardized, because the rosevins are the active ingredient in rhodiola. And we find that anywhere between, generally speaking, about 100 milligrams upwards to about 400 or 500 milligrams per day of a rhodiola extract can have profound nootropic benefits. I'm also a huge proponent of meditation. And I could go on and on and on and on why, if I had to recommend one thing for people across the board, it would be meditation. It is the most powerful and most researched nootropic out there. And it just flat out works. You know, I will tell everybody, just start a meditation practice. Even if it's just 10 minutes a day, closing your eyes, watching your breath. It's kind of a panacea for the modern world. And it really helps you to slow down, be more mindful, and just shift your focus inward. And the research is super compelling. I mean, there's almost no aspect of life that meditation can't improve. And there's almost no aspect of brain function too, that it can't help optimize. It can literally rewire your brain if you do it consistently day in and day out. And so I absolutely love meditation for its nootropic benefits as well.
Yeah, meditation is not the sexiest answer, but at the same time, the only way to do it wrong is to beat yourself up about what you do during the session. But aside from that, however you do it, you just take that time out of your day to like tap into your body or tap into your mind or tap into whatever, just to like unwind like that and become more like introspective and self-aware. Like that's profoundly beneficial.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, there's no one way to meditate. You know, I find it is helpful to find a technique that's proven and then to lean on it. I know I've done a lot of 10-day silent meditation retreats, and there's no doubt I would have gone crazy just sitting there watching my breath go in and out if I didn't have a tool. And so I'm a big fan of Vipassana meditation, because they give you that tool that you keep coming back to and using, and eventually you get very good at using it and your meditation improves, and suddenly you can sit for, you know, 60 minutes, 120 minutes in one sitting, and it becomes easier and easier.
Wow, 120 minutes in one sitting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I certainly recommend finding a retreat, doing a retreat. So Vipassana is great because there's centers all over the world. They provide these 10-day silent meditation retreats for free. And it's incredible instruction. You're in community where everybody's meditating. And they just give you that tool. And you're meditating for often between 11 to 13 hours per day in 1-hour increments. And it's just like exercise. You're building that muscle so that over time it becomes easier and easier to do. You know, I find that after I do one of those 10-day meditation retreats, I can sit for hours without any issue. My mind is a little bit quieter. My knees don't hurt as much as they used to, and I'm okay. I'm more at peace. And so, you know, I recommend for everybody, you know, buy a pillow. I prefer the little moon-shaped meditation pillow just because of ergonomics. And then carve out a little space in your house that's just dedicated to your meditation practice. And then find a time that you can stick with day in and day out just to start. Just start with 10 minutes and just make it your little ritual that you do day in and day out. And it just becomes easier and easier. But it does take work, and it's important to be consistent in your daily practice.
Yeah, that's a good point, to be consistent. Find one system you like. Follow that for a while, because then you can track your progress and you can notice that it's getting easier. I just did 10 minutes and day before I struggled with 7 minutes. So that's a good point, that while you can do whatever you want and you can change it every time, following a different system today and then doing another one tomorrow, if you stick with one, you can actually see improvements.
Yeah, it's a really important point. And one other point that I'll mention here, since we've talked about Ayurveda. So yoga is the sister science to Ayurveda, and the whole point of yoga is not to get physical exercise. It's to allow you to sit in meditation. And so that is what yoga is designed for. It allows you to open up your hips. It strengthens your joints, and it calms your mind. And so the point of yoga is to cease the fluctuations in the mind. So that you're able to sit in meditation for long periods of time. And so I would recommend starting a yoga practice at the same time as starting your meditation practice. They really do go hand in hand.
What I thought was really cool is when I was learning about Ayurveda, I did the assessments and figured out like which type I am, which dosha I am. And then I correlated that with my real world experience, and my type tends to hold tension in the hips. A lot of emotion resides in that general area. And sure enough, when I see masseuses and body workers, they always mention I have tight hips. So during my yoga practice, which is admittedly less frequent than it should be, I will focus on certain things that my type tends to need the most work with. And I will not do a lot of the common things that are seen as universal, because the way I heard it described is that if you look at the body or think of the body as a wheel, you want the spokes to be the same length. And if you're doing one pose, one stretch that you find really easy, it doesn't feel at all uncomfortable, you can be lengthening certain spokes and shortening certain spokes, leading to greater physical and maybe mental, emotional, spiritual imbalances.
Yeah, and that's my problem for hot yoga. You know, I love doing hot yoga, but I don't think it's right for everybody, because people become much more limber and much more stretchy during these sessions. And oftentimes it leads to injuries. People overexert themselves in ways that they shouldn't. And so, you know, ultimately it just points to the fact that find a teacher. Work with somebody that knows what they're doing, somebody that can understand your body and your needs. It, you know, generally speaking, it will cost a little bit to find the right teacher. You'll have to pay for it, but in the end, I think it's priceless. You know, eventually, if you can get that strong foundation with that teacher next to you, then you can bring your practice home, or you can do your thing elsewhere. And so that is an important point.
Especially early on when you're learning new skills of any kind, especially physical skills, whether it's yoga or it's lifting, it's vital to have good instruction, because every repetition, every session you do in the wrong way is muscle memory. It's going to take 5x, 10x longer to undo.
They're really their own little areas of science and research. And so people have put a lot of time and attention in all of these areas. And so I think it's important to tap into that wisdom and not try to go it alone. And so, weightlifting is a perfect example. You know, I think it is important to get a trainer, at least initially. Make sure you understand the exercises and you're not hurting your joints while you're trying to build your muscles. And so, across the board, find a teacher whether it's for meditation, whether it's for yoga, whether it's, you know, trying to figure out your Ayurvedic body type, find somebody that's an expert in that area, and get those insights so that then you can build your own foundation.
Well, Dr. Bitz, we've been going for a while and we could talk for hours clearly. So we will start to wrap this one up. And before we do, if there was a burning of the books and all knowledge on earth was lost, what three resources or teachers would you choose and why?
Wow. Okay. Books that I've leaned on in the past and continue to lean on really are few and far between. But I will say Robert Svoboda has a book called Prakriti, a weird Sanskrit word, but Prakriti was my introduction to Ayurveda some 25 years ago. And I still highly, highly recommend this book because it's very accessible. It's very comprehensive, and it really covers most of the key principles of Ayurveda. It's a really fun read. So highly recommend that book. I've made that recommendation to many people in the past, and people always come back and they're like, thank you so much. That changed my life. Because I am a botanical medicine enthusiast, I do love anything that relates to botanical medicine. My favorite book for that purpose would be a book called The Yoga of Herbs. It's written by Vasant Lad, who is one of the foremost experts in Ayurveda. And it's just a really excellent reference for understanding the energetic properties of herbs and botanicals. And it's really a one-of-a-kind book. I still reference it frequently to inform new formulas, to understand the energetic properties in terms of, is this product heating or calming or drying, or is it oily? You know, what is the energetic property of those herbs individually and collectively? And so that is one. Maybe the last book that I'll mention is the Shambhala Encyclopedia of Yoga. George Feuerstein is the author, and it's just this really amazing Sanskrit dictionary, but very readable, very accessible to Western students. I think it's ideal for anyone that's interested in dabbling in Vedic philosophy. Mm.
Well, those are all right up my alley, and I've not heard of any of them, so I have some homework to do there. Okay. Well, if people are interested in connecting with you or trying out Qualia Senolytic or your nootropic Qualia Mind or any of the other Neurohacker products, how do they get in touch with you and Neurohacker?
Yeah, Neurohacker is a big player on all the social media platforms. Neurohacker.com is an excellent resource. You can buy all the products there. We have a ton of articles, blogs, research, monographs on every ingredient in our products. So that's a really excellent resource. So those would be my recommendations.
Cool. And the Neurohacker team did set up a special discount for MindBody Peak Performance listeners. So if you use the code URBAN, that will save you 15% on Qualia Senolytic, and I think on other products as well. Well, let's go on to a quick rapid fire round now and call it a day. What's one thing that you've changed your mind on in the last year?
Boy, you're putting me on the spot. The mind is everything. I think I always knew it, but now I know it more so than I've ever have known it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Are there any particular ingredients or molecules that you're researching or interested in these days?
Yes, I am particularly interested in an herb called Kana, Scalidium tortuosum, comes from South Africa, incredibly beneficial for creating empathy, kindness, feelings of positivity and happiness. It's a low-dose botanical, seems to be very effective. We're looking at its application right now.
Is Zembrin the patented version?
Zembrin is the patented version. Yeah, there is a couple generic versions that are out there as well. And I find it works very well in a tincture, a liquid tincture format.
A new nootropic that uses Zembrin and a handful of other ingredients to instill confidence. And I was surprised. It was surprisingly potent for me.
I love it. It's super felt. And in part, that's why I'm doing more research. I'm using it now daily, just trying to understand how it works for me. But again, early days, not a lot of research yet, but a lot of traditional use. That's really compelling.
What's one thing the Neurohacker tribe does not know about you?
Oh boy. You know, I'm a family man. I'm married. I have a 9-year-old daughter. And for me, that's life. That's really, what fills me up on a daily basis. That's what I put most of my energy into. I never thought that I would love being a family man so much, but that's what my life has become, which is fantastic.
Beautiful. Well, any final words today?
No, not really. I want to impress on the potential and promise of Senolytics. It really is a super fascinating area. Hard to overstate all of that. And hopefully I just helped to shed a little bit of light on this area and made it a little bit more tangible, because it is a little bit technical and unfriendly to a non-technical mindset. But the area is really fascinating and interesting. So hopefully I was able to shed a little bit of light on that.
Well, Dr. Nick Bitz, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really fun chatting with you and exploring these intersections of a bunch of different fascinating old and modern topics with you.
Thanks, Nick. It's been fun.
I hope that this has been helpful for you. If you enjoyed it, subscribe and hit the thumbs up. I love knowing who's in the 1% committed to reaching their full potential. Comment 1% below so that I know who you are. For all the resources and links, meet me on my website at mindbodypeak.com. I appreciate you and look forward to connecting with you.
As a reminder, the information depicted in this video is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.